WISS, and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Patrick. Denmark.
Members of the Texas State Senate
and always streaming on
whether
Civic
to remove
Media
the state's
app.
Attorney General Ken Paxton after an impeachment trial. ABC's Jim Ryan.
The GOP dominates the Texas House, but the body voted in May to impeach Republican Attorney General Ken Paxton on allegations of bribery, obstruction of justice, and abuse of public trust. Many of the complaints against the third-term AG arose from his relationship with an Austin real estate investor and Paxton campaign contributor named Nate Paul. It's the first time in nearly a century that a Texas politician has faced impeachment and ultimately removal from office. Jim Ryan, ABC News, Dallas.
Nearly 13,000 members of the United Auto Workers now on strike for the first time against all big three U.S. car makers at the same time. They're looking for a 40% raise. GM has offered 20%. The remnants of Hurricane Lee churning up the Atlantic Ocean and lashing New England. States of emergency declared in Massachusetts and Maine. This is ABC News. Convicted South Carolina murderer Alex Murdoch's attempt to get a new trial derailed for now. The disgraced former attorney was found guilty in March of murdering his wife and son and is serving two life sentences. His attorneys are claiming there was jury tampering. ABC's Jacqueline Lee has more.
The South Carolina Attorney General filing a response Friday, calling Murdoch's motion for a new trial procedurally defective, asking the judge to give Murdoch's attorneys 10 days to refile with evidence to support the defense's claims that the jury was tampered with by court clerk Becky Hill. Murdoch's attorneys say Hill advised jurors not to believe Murdoch's testimony and also pressured the jury to reach a quick guilty verdict. All they say, to secure for herself a book deal and media appearances that would not happen in the event of a mistrial.
States of emergency declared as the remnants of Hurricane Lee churn up the Atlantic. High winds whipping up rough surf and creating huge waves in northern New England. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Mino and the Mayor.
We're talking with Tony Mandrich. You're talking about your alcohol problems. Jim kind of mentioned here during the break. He said, yeah, the coaches didn't do anything about it. And I said, didn't do anything about it. They were with the guys.
I mean, nobody forced anybody to drink. Drinking was just part of it. And it was kind of like that stereotype of, you know, being a guy or being an athlete, or it was just part of that.
Mino and the Mayor. Weekday mornings from 6 until 8 on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS. And on the Civic Media app.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A new poll suggests impeaching Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz is an unpopular idea with voters. Mike Moan reports.
A Better Wisconsin Together, a left-leaning research group, is out with new survey results showing that Wisconsinites oppose impeaching Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz by a 24-point margin. The poll was released the same day Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss announced he's putting together a panel to look at grounds for removing the judge. A Better Wisconsin Together's Mike Brown says, based on the election and the survey, such a move goes against the will of voters.
Wisconsin voters value their votes, and they expect that their legislators will respect the results of those votes. The impeachment proceedings threatening to overturn the election are very definitely in opposition to what a very strong majority of Wisconsin voters feel.
The poll of 600 registered voters conducted by a national firm was essentially evenly split in connecting with Republicans and Democrats. Voss and other Republicans have floated a possible impeachment over opposition to comments Protasiewicz made on the campaign trail regarding redistricting. Brown notes that any misgivings about what the judge said prior to the election don't carry much weight.
The Judicial Commission, which oversees and enforces court ethics, has already dismissed several baseless complaints brought by state Republicans against Justice Protasiewicz, and they declared the matter closed.
Also from the poll, 46% of Wisconsin voters think any effort to remove Protasiewicz is driven by political motivations among Republicans based on the election results. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Yeah. Todd Albo would normally be sharing his dulcet tones with us, but you'll recall that last week, Todd was having issues with the cable company, with an internet connection. I'm now thinking, Todd Albo, did you break Spectrum? Are you responsible for this ESPN mess?
I seem to broke everything else, so it wouldn't surprise me, no.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning, 6 till 8. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and we are brought to you by Jolly Good Soda. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Cripescast. Folks, today we have a very special guest. If you've seen Impractical Jokers, you know him. He's doing a whole stand-up tour now. Joe Gatto, just in Milwaukee. Very funny guy, and just an honor to talk to him, being someone who grew up kind of watching Impractical Jokers and always being impressed on the stuff they can pull off. We get into the weeds a little bit. We even incorporate some of your questions for him, and a super fun interview. Joining me in this intro is the fearless executive producer of the Cripescast, Colleen Maraca. Colleen, we got some tour dates coming up, and those, I know we got Vegas, obviously, Kansas. What else is cooking?
We have shows in Reading, is PA, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Over there in Pennsylvania, yeah.
Yeah, we have Las Vegas on October 8th. Then we have a little leg of Kansas, Missouri, Indiana on October 12th, Wichita, Kansas, October 13th, Kansas City. Missouri on the 14th. We got Springfield, Missouri on the 16th. We've got 15th. We've got Evansville, Indiana. And then we actually just added an early show in Rochester, Minnesota on October 21st. So October's got a lot of dates. Yeah.
A lot of dates in October. Nice. Yeah. Nice. So if you want to see the live stand-up show, just had a lot of fun in Chicago this past weekend, playing the Den. We did a few shows there. And then I got to go to the Packers-Bears game and watch the Packers win, watch Jordan Love's first touchdown pass of the regular season. It was awesome. And the Bears, Colleen, unfortunately, they still suck. Colleen is not a Bears fan.
I don't really have any affiliations.
Cubs fan, though.
I just like being controversial. So when I was with all my Bears fans, like family this weekend, I was like, go Pack, go. And they're like they just were getting pissed at me. I just like to say stuff.
You're one of those. You know, Miles is that way as well.
Yeah.
Miles being from Fargo, they didn't really have a football team. So he would always, and the Vikings were closest. So he would just be a contrarian. So you're one of those sort of saboteur, not really football fans, but just someone who gets in the weeds.
Yeah. I was born in Chicago, grew up in Minnesota, and then I live in Wisconsin for the past however many years. So it's like, and then
you're
my
confused.
Mom's, and then, yeah, exactly. My mom's a Browns fan because she's from Ohio. So it's like, there's no,
yeah.
The only thing, yeah, I don't really care as long as like there's a good tailgate. That's all I really care about.
Okay. In it for the drinking. My executive producer.
That and the Instagram picture. Where can I sit center field or where can I sit on the 50 yard line to look really cool? I will be there.
Yeah.
You got me.
Yeah. You are the worst sports fan. I love it.
I'm experiential. Okay. I like the experience. Okay.
I think we should just hop into it, get into my conversation with Joe. And quick reminder, folks, if you're looking for any merchandise, any show tickets, our Patreon, just go to cripescast.com. It is all linked up there for you. Okay, and without further ado, here is my conversation with Joe Gatto. How have you been?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Fresh out of Milwaukee, actually. I had the show this weekend. Yeah. It was great there.
How was it?
Oh, so great. I love that town, man. Always good crowds, good shopping down to the Third Ward, hanging out, got some good food. Oh. Yeah.
Nice. You did some shopping down there. Where'd you go?
I love it. One of my favorite stores is down there. I think it's Milford. Is that the name of it? I think it's called Milford.
Oh, that's yeah.
The men's shop. Yeah, right down there by the park. And when I walked out of the park, it was so weird. I walked out of the park and there was this like class that's sitting in the park around and they're all drawing. It was an art class. One guy sitting in the middle, like on the rotunda, and then everybody's just seated around, all the students. And one girl recognized me and goes, Joe. And I go, and I look, I said, hey, and she goes, can I get a picture? And the whole class was like, what? And she was like, it's Joe. And I was like, and I walked over, I was like, yeah. And you're in the middle of class. And the teacher goes, all right, let's just get a class picture. So I took a class picture with these art students that half of them didn't even know who I was. It was very funny.
Do you get that a lot?
Yeah, I do. I get, you know, it's funny because like I look familiar, but not exactly like they don't know exactly where they know me from. I kind of
right. So like, you kind of get that side, I think.
Yeah, you're the guy, are you? Who's this guy? This guy? And then you always get the one person that's like, I don't know you. I'm sorry. I'm like, don't be sorry. It's okay. You don't have to know me.
Yeah, you don't have to apologize for that. It's such a weird thing. I feel like sometimes it's, you know, if you're in that position, I was talking to a buddy of mine who. He used to get recognized like all the time and then his kind of thing started to fade a little bit. So he was complaining about when he got recognized all the time. And then as soon as that problem was solved, he was like, my career's ending, you know? So, I mean,
it's a weird thing you have. Like people forgot about me. Nobody loves me. Oh, sure. I'll take a picture.
Yeah, it's just where you're standing out there kind of looking around, you know, hoping someone notices you.
So we have fun when we go shopping. Like I'll be with my friends and whatnot. And like, if I want to like, see if I can get, like, if we're not getting seated at a table, let's say like quickly, like I'll walk in and if I have like sunglasses on, I'll always do like a big reveal. Like I'll walk in and I'll just go up to the hostess stand and pretend I'm looking. I'll be like, what is, oh, hey, I'm sorry. No, I'm just looking at the menu. This is the, and I just wait. And if somebody wants to take a picture with me, I'll pull them in front of the host stand. I'm like, oh, sorry, this is happening. I'm getting flooded. Could we please get seated? And they're like, oh, who are you? Table for three. Just please help us.
What is kind of, I guess first I just want to talk real quick about Milwaukee. How many times have you been over to Milwaukee and, do you have any like weird audience interactions? Cause I like to ask that sometimes if buddies of mine who have done Milwaukee shows, cause for whatever reason, there's always seems to be something that comes out of Milwaukee that's a little goofy. Any experience with that or Wisconsin more broadly?
Well, I will say that I did my first stand-up act ever solo in Appleton, Wisconsin. I did my first act in
Skyline?
January of, yes, did the Skyline in January of 22. It was my first ever. I was with my boy Steve Byrne, my and my friend, you know, one of the comedian Jiggy, and we did the show. And I did my first solo stand-up set, and it was unbelievable. But it was Saturday night, January, Green Bay, at my Sunday night show, the Green Bay Packers had a game. There was a snowstorm. They lost. People came in and were just absolutely miserable.
That is.
And it was like
the worst time to do a show.
I was like, this is my life. Now I'm in trouble. But the crowds were great, man. It was really fun. Sold out shows, like really nice. That club's really great. And but it was just funny that my first thing is there. But I always say, like, it was the whitest crowd I've ever seen in my life, like zero diversity. And I say, and I always make the joke, it was like I jumped into a bowl of milk and I was talking to marshmallows. Like, that's how white the crowd was. But yeah, it was a really weird weekend. It was a very interesting weekend for me. Because I was just getting into the foray of, you know, being on stage by myself in a stand-up format and all that. But it was good. I mean, and like I said, like Milwaukee is, I've been through Milwaukee a bunch. We played there at least twice with the boys, maybe even three times. And then I've been there solo once to Milwaukee. And then I've been through Appleton. And it's just always, you know, it's a good state for me. It's a good crowds all the time.
Yeah. What is like, so what inspired sort of the transition into stand up for you?
So I had to, you know, I had a change in situation in my personal life and I had to figure it out. So I had to take a step away and you know, things happened and I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do here? And to pay the bills, you know, and I also, you know, live to make people laugh. Comedy is my a love of mine. I was like, what can I do? So I had to talk with my team and they're like, well, you're a live performer. You've been performing live since 99, you know? So they're like, why don't you get up in front of the crowd and try stand up? And I was like, okay. I was like, how does that really work? And I got some stand up friends of mine, you know, just hashed out some talking. And I always, in the formats we did with the show, it was kind of like when we did the live show with the boys, which I toured, you know, 6 years, 7 years with them in all, you know, these arenas and whatnot. It was just like, basically everybody like told a story and then you chimed in on everybody else's story and whatnot, but everybody even had a chunk. So I was like, okay, well, I have that technique down to being able to tell a story. And so my sets are really just like storytelling because I've had such a crazy, crazy life at this point, you know, crazy 47 years. So I just dove in. I was like, okay, what stories are fun to tell? And, you know, what can I tell about my friendship with the guys that you don't see on TV? And I just have so many stories of just like our friendship and things. And then it opened up more into like when I started about, you know, parenting and my dog rescue and all this stuff. So the show quickly evolved from this Skyline comedy club show. Within 3 months, I was doing theaters because I had this bigger show and so many people wanted to come out and see me. So it was just like I evolved and I was like, all right, I got to put together a good hour here. And I'm pretty happy with the hour that I got the, you know, with the product. It wasn't just like, I'm like, oh, all right, I got to go out here to pay the bills. But then I was like, oh, I'm actually enjoying this. This is fun. People are liking the show. So I naturally started a, you know, a new path of, oh, okay, this is another way I can entertain besides TV, movie, or live performance with a group. Let's try a stand up. And I've really, really enjoyed it. So that's basically the roadmap to it.
And from a guy with like you with an improv background, like what sort of and sort of, you know, your career based a lot off of improv, like what kind of elements with stand up does improv sort of add a new dynamic to and what is it kind of not helpful in some other ways?
Yeah. In the beginning, it was helpful because I'm not afraid to try stuff on stage as I'm building my hour. Right. So if like I felt like something hit or I felt something with a joke and I just went with it. I was like, you know what? This might be funny. Let me try to talk about this. And I would just evolve the story. And then when I would see what hits, I would go, you know? But the biggest thing for me is when I got to a theater stage, like I'm very physical. Like I'm a physical comedian. I like to be able to move around and it's like a stage is more comfortable for me because I have more room. Like in these comedy clubs, I was like a little, people are right on you. Like I'm kind of like, it was kind of harder for me to develop. So I think I really like, with the room, I kind of, you know, of a bigger stage, I think I actually got better and, you know, blossomed, if you will, because I was like, I'm like a panther out there. I don't stop moving. You know, I just like, that's just a kind
crawling.
Of, I'm just rolling around, like, you know, and I like to, you know, see that kind of stuff. So it was interesting for me. I think the improv in the beginning gave me the confidence just to be like, I'm going to try to talk about this, or I see this guy, let me do some crowd work with that and whatnot. Cause we did crowd work in the live shows too. But the big thing with the live shows with the guys was, it was, you know, four people. You only have to be 25% of the funny. If you try something that doesn't work, somebody's got your back, you know? So it was like barely failed, barely, you know, with when you're up there with your best friends that you know are funny and you know you're funny together. So that was a little bit of the transition. I would say the thing that hurt me the most was I'm not good at memorizing, you know, I'm not good at like repetition of it. So in the beginning, like when I knew I was telling my stories, they were a little static. Cause I'm trying to remember and not really performing it. If that makes sense, you know,
totally so, makes sense.
Yeah. So that was, and then I was like, you know what, let me just embrace it and just talk about it. Remember what I want to hit, do it a little free form. And then it just flowed. So I think I had to get over that hump naturally.
Yeah. I mean, did you do a thing where like, you know, sort of your punchline, the thing you're landing on, and then just saying that a bunch to get it on the tongue, get that muscle memory. And then
And the flip of that too, is like, if I said something that I thought was funny and I was like, I probably have something funnier here. I'm not going to say that punchline. Let me say something else. And I won't think about it till I get on stage. And that's how I found a lot of my stuff. And I was like, that's the one. And then I'd remember it. And then I would incorporate that punchline. Like a lot of my punchlines, you know, changed within months of, you know, because some was funny, but some was funnier. So.
And is this because since you do have that sort of improv deal, I mean, you probably do stuff on stage that is hilarious and you forget about. Do you record your sets and look back at them?
I do record my sets. I used to listen to them a lot before, but now I perform so often that it's kind of like, you know, muscle memory, and I'll have the set down. And then I don't really want to force it because a lot of things that are funny in the moment are because of that moment. You know, so like if something happens, I'll just do that. But there is some stuff that has just been fun and I love to incorporate and move around, you know, with stuff, because I know I like to talk to the crowd too. That's a big thing. You know, that's why I'm out here. I'm out here with my fans having a good time. I want to make sure people are having a good time. And, you know, if I feel like jumping off the stage and going to talk to somebody, I'm going to do it. You know, I've done that a bunch where I just jump down and go. But I do this thing where I had every show, which is fun. I put a cookie in my back pocket. I did this randomly. I was on side stage and there was a plate of cookies and I just put one in my back pocket. And I went out and I was just looked around the crowd. And I looked at somebody who wasn't really, you know, there was kind of the plus one, like was kind of in it. There was this guy, this bigger guy, and he just had his, like his arm crossed and he was looking, and his lady he was with was like all smiles. And I was like, oh, sir, did you not want to come here tonight? And he's like, no, I didn't. He's like, I was like, do you know who I am? What were you expecting? And I named whatever the set was, who was coming next. I think it was like the Phantom of the Opera was playing there. So I was like, did you think I was the Phantom? And so everybody left, whatever. And I said, come here, it'll be all right. And I jumped down and I took the cookie out of my pocket and I said, take this, it's on me. And he lost it. Everybody laughed. And I was like, this is funny. So now every time I go out, I have a cookie in my pocket and I do that bit where I find somebody. But that just came from a moment of a plate of cookies before they announced me on the side of the stage. And I was like, this could be fun, you know?
Yeah. And now it's kind of like that thing that can always rescue you if a show or if something's not going great or whatever.
Yeah, and it's a fun way to start too. Right. Like it's a fun way to start. It's like, you know, this guy's an idiot. Let's get out there, laugh, have a good time, you know. So
right. Yeah. What's kind of been one of your favorite topics to sort of mine for your stand up? You got your family, you got the work you do with dogs. You mentioned both of those. You got, you know, stories from the road. Is it been that kind of stuff, or has it been like sort of moments of just observational things in your life currently?
I don't have much observation stuff. It's really story based, and there is observation stuff mixed in. Like I talk about when I was younger, I wasn't really an athlete. Then I talk about my perspective on sports, you know, a little bit,
yeah,
and go weaving in. But it's all kind of combined. But I think the main thread of it all is basically just getting to know about me. You know, so I talk about everything about, you know, I start with my friendship with the guys, and then into parenthood, and then growing up with a crazy Italian mother is a huge thing. My mother was a huge influence. She has millions of stories. You know, I had a crazy Sicilian mother who was, I was her baby boy and would do anything to protect me. So I have so many stories about me as a geeky child and her coming to my rescue, you know, things like that. And then of course, just like I've had a very lucky, fortunate life where I've just been in situations where meeting people and stuff, like meeting celebrities and just being in places that I've just made these crazy, you know, events. So I like to shed light into that too.
Right. And for those who don't know, where did you grow up and what was kind of your childhood like in your upbringing?
So I grew up in Staten Island, New York. I went to an all boy Catholic high school. That's where I met the guys. Called Monsignor nice. Farrell.
Me too.
Yeah. And in high school, I was a mathlete and a bowler. Go Strike Force, my peeps. And, you know, dang. So I was crushing it. So cool, like cat. I was kind of geeky. Yeah. I was kind of geeky. And then I met the guys, started having fun with humor. I used humor to help me against bullying and stuff. And it kind of worked in my favor. And then we started doing improv in high school together. And I found my love for making people laugh probably junior year, senior year of high school, took that into college where I went to college out on Long Island and, at LIU post. And then, when I went to college, it was like kind of help with the social skills, you know, the people skills. I think that was the biggest part of it because school came pretty easy to me. I was pretty smart, you know, so like I didn't have to put a lot there, but my social skills are not great. So I was like really put the time in to be in uncomfortable situations and force myself to come out of my shell a little bit. And I think that really helped. So, but yeah, so growing up in Staten Island was a thing.
Yeah. I mean, were you kind of bullied into comedy?
I wouldn't say I was bullied into comedy because I'll say my house was filled with laughter. My parents were a big influence on me because they both loved to laugh. We all laughed as a family. My mother was, you know, I'm a mix of my mother and my father. I think my father was like the silent assassin. He was a 6'3" big dude who could say something just like one liner is just loud enough that you heard it. And when you were laughing, people would look at you and be like, I don't know why he's laughing, like that kind of guy. And my mother was like a tornado, like star of the show, took over a room when she came in, didn't even try to, just people gravitated towards her. She had that kind of personality, you know? So I think I'm a kind of a mix of those two.
Got it. And then, so you got sort of that, internal, comedy mechanics just naturally through how you grew up.
Then yeah. I enjoyed laughing. Like I came from a loving, fun house, you know, I was fortunate enough to have that kind of, you know, growing up, and we had like fun, and I was like, you know, life could be fun. You know, you could do this. And then when I was faced with, you know, a little bit of bullying in school, I was like, well, let me just, you know, be myself and try to make them laugh a little bit. And I remember, you know, I was in a situation where one of the football players was like, you know, they were always just like, they were the cool kids, you know, with the all boy, so much testosterone in that room, you know, all boy Catholic high school. There's some boys that were bigger, some that weren't. I was like 104 pounds, you know, senior year. So like I would walk through the halls and it was this one big guy. And I would just, one day I just like knocked the books out of his hand. And I said, pick him up. And he goes, I'm sorry, Mr. Gatto. And he just jumped in on the joke and it was funny. And it did this like reverse thing where like, I made him give me piggyback rides to school, to class. Like it was like really funny. Like we had just had fun. And it just really changed the dynamic in the school, I think, where people were just like, there really wasn't really a bullying kind of thing. Like people would just be like, we're all friends here kind of thing. And I was really happy about that. And I just, you know, used humor and I was like, okay. And then the improv started and I got better at it because the improv class was like funny and you worked on being funny and things to say and really learned the trade. So I think it all helped.
Yeah. Yeah. And with improv, did you come up with the short form style, the long form style? What was sort of like the first class you took the first?
Yeah, we did short form. It was all like gamey stuff in high school. And then we tried a long form kind of thing. But then when I performed with the guys, when we formed our comedy troupe in 99, we did a thing called the Armando, which is a long form kind of format. That's what we performed live in our shows. We also played some games and stuff, but then we did that Armando thing, which was fun.
Yeah, is that similar to like a Herald type deal? Or
yeah,
is that,
it's a looser, it's a looser concept. Yeah, it's a looser. Herald's like more of a structure, and the Armando's a little bit more loose, where you don't necessarily have to tie everything back up together. You just, it's a little less rules, if you will. But it's fun.
And how long did you guys like have to do this in order to like, you know, build confidence and know like you had it? Was there a moment or something where you're like, okay, we got this? Or was it always like ups and downs?
We were so critical of ourselves. We practiced in my mom's basement for 6 months and videotaped ourselves on a tripod. And we used to watch back the tapes. We met 3 times a week for nobody before we even took our first stage. And the first stage we did was a 50-person theater in Manhattan that we basically invited our friends and family to the show. So there was no risk. It was just like our friends and family in a room who already thought we were funny. Yeah, I mean, we took a while before we started.
I don't think I've ever heard of an improv group doing that, though. You know, like,
yeah, I mean,
usually it's jumping into the wild and just letting it happen, you know, and sometimes that shows on stage. But
yeah, I think it's everybody's process, too. I think everybody's process, like Sal is very meticulous with and a very much a fan of comedy, a professional when it comes to comedy. Like he is just a guy that likes to know all the boxes are checked before he gets out there and crushes it. So I think that's I think that was part of it, too. It was like, you know, we have very different mindsets when it comes to stuff. We laugh all the time, me and Sal, because he's probably the most indecisive person I know. One of the most indecisive people I know when it comes to certain things. And yeah, indecisive is the wrong word. Analytical is better. He's very analytical when it comes to things before he makes a decision. And I am very much like, oh, this is the answer. And like as a group, you know, there's 4 of us. So we'd have to like make these decisions as a group. And I would like be like, I get the information. I'm like, yeah, this is what we'll do. And then Sal like, well, wait, can we talk? And we would talk for hours and whatnot. And then he would be like, yeah, that's right. Let's do that. And I'm like, dude, you just stop listening to me. Like we laugh about all the time, but everybody has their own process, you know? So I think that was part of it. Cause you got to get there on your own, you know?
Yeah. 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 I mean, and did you like transfer that aspect when you went to do stand up? Like, did you watch a tape back ever? Did you film that? Or was that more his process and the group kind of adopted it?
Yeah, that was his process. Mine was, I just got it. I was like, all right, I'm getting on stage. Let's do it. So I got out there and I did it and it went really well, actually. So that helped. I guess if it didn't go well, I would have been like, oh, I should take this. But it went really well. So I think, I think from it, I was more like, what am I going to talk about? What's funny? And when I was writing what I'm going to talk about, I would be more like, that's not right. I'd be very hard on it. And then I would, you know, say it to my friends that I was doing stand up with. And I'd be like, what do you think about it? They're like, that's funny. I'm like, I don't think it is. And I'm like, just try it. And then I would try it. And I'd be like, okay, it's funny, but this other story I have is funnier. And then I would just like, so yeah, that's what took the hardest part, was like building the hour of like, okay, what's the funniest stuff to say together? And I got there, you know, but that was the biggest part of my process, was what do I think is the funniest the stuff that I could put out there for the time, because people don't know what they're coming to get when they see me, right? They used to see me on TV in a hidden camera comedy show. They don't necessarily think I'm funny in this arena, right? You know, so when people, I get all the time after, it's so funny. It's like the two backhanded compliments I get all the time is, oh, wow, you're really funny. And then, oh, you're not as fat as you look on TV. And I'm like, thank you. You know what I mean? So it's like so weird. That was part of it for me.
Mino and the Mayor in the morning and the talk of Green Bay all day long. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Members of the Texas State Senate voting on whether to remove the state's Attorney General Ken Paxton after an impeachment trial. ABC's Jim Ryan.
The GOP dominates the Texas House, but the body voted in May to impeach Republican Attorney General Ken Paxton on allegations of bribery, obstruction of justice, and abuse of public trust. Many of the complaints against the third-term AG arose from his relationship with an Austin real estate investor and Paxton campaign contributor named Nate Paul. It's the first time in nearly a century that a Texas politician has faced impeachment and ultimately removal from office. Jim Ryan, ABC News, Dallas.
Nearly 13,000 members of the United Auto Workers now on strike for the first time against all big three U.S. car makers at the same time. They're looking for a 40% raise. GM has offered 20%. The remnants of Hurricane Lee churning up the Atlantic Ocean and lashing New England, states of emergency declared in Massachusetts and Maine. This is ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Spin the globe and pick where you would go this summer at Ho-Chunk Gaming and Koosa. We'll be giving away a vacation of your dreams with our Vacation Your Way promotion. Throughout the month of September, you can earn entries for your chance to be one of 10 lucky winners on September 30th, with one grand prize winner receiving a travel certificate for anywhere your heart desires. Only at Ho-Chunk Gaming and Koosa, your place to play. For complete contest rules, see the Rewards Club booth at Ho-Chunk Gaming and Koosa. Must be 21 or older to participate and enter the casino floor.
Show the world that age is just a number. Ho-Chunk Gaming and Koosa presents the Golden Days for those who are 50 and wiser. Turn up your excitement, because each Tuesday from July to December, you can earn 25 same-day slot points and $10 rewards play. Redeem up to 4 times. The Golden Days await at Ho-Chunk Gaming and Koosa, where the only thing more exciting than your luck is the fun you'll have. For complete contest rules, see the Rewards Club booth at Ho-Chunk Gaming and Koosa. Must be 21 or older to participate and enter the casino floor.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Hey, folks, if you're just tuning in, I'm Charlie Behrens, and this is my conversation with Joe Gatto. When was it with the improv when you guys got the opportunity for the show? How did you, I mean, you had a successful troupe, and then how did the show come to be? What was sort of the inciting moment for that?
We failed multiple television show pilot things for a while. So we got a pilot. There was a show called It's Your Show, which was a comedy show that was happening in the early 2000s. And it was during a time when, you know, when the internet was big and everybody was like, how do we put the internet comedy on TV? Like, this is one of the formulas they came up with. It was a show hosted by Carson Daly for Fox that was, I'm sorry, for NBC, that was basically America's Funniest Home Videos for sketch groups. They would give you a topic. You would have to make a sketch about it. When you made the sketch, it would go online and then people would vote and you'd win $1,000. At this point, our mailing list was huge. We basically just cooked the pot. We just were like, put up a thing. Our stuff was funny, but we would just put up a thing and then everybody would like, you know, vote that we asked to from our mailing list to go to this thing. So we won like 10 different of those challenges. So we won like $10,000. It was great. And then they were like, the pilot got picked up and they were doing a $100,000 grand prize for three finalists. And we were one of the finalists. So we had to make a video for it. So we made the video, we won the $100,000 and the pilot never aired. It was a failed pilot it never went to air and they still had to pay us. So we won $100,000 for no reason. So that didn't go. We were like, unfortunate that we were like, oh, that was going to be a good break for us on TV. But the people who produced the show, the production company, saw our tape and was like, yo, these guys are funny. They should have their own show. And we tried a sketch show. Yeah. It failed. We tried another one. It failed. And then eventually we came up with the idea we're jokers. And we took that out. And the rest is history.
Yeah. It's tough to get like improv and sketch shows. Those kind of have their day on TV. I feel like it kind of comes and it goes, you know. Did you notice that? Was that part of, like, I feel like, you know, you have the Chappelle show, you have Key and Peele, Amy Schumer, right, all sort of sketch based shows. Those are hot, and then they kind of go away.
Yeah,
then they come back again.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you hit rewind a little bit, you know, you have Mad TV, you have SNL, you know, you have SNL, In Living Color, right? Then it's down, then it comes back up with, you know, Chappelle and all that. So I do think there's an ebb and flow to that stuff. People want it then, but now I think the real home for sketch is really the internet. I really think it is the home. But I don't know if people can watch it on TV as much, but I think sketch really crushes on the internet. Which is funny because it was king for a while on television, you know? So, but you never know, like, you know, sketch kind of finds its own format, you know, like you could argue that Nathan For You is a sketch show too, right? Even though it's like a reality kind of thing, you know, but it's kind of really heavily sketch. I mean, you could even argue that Jokers is. I mean, Jokers was heavily like prepared. We were, you know, we wrote jokes, thought things that we thought would be funny. You know, of course, stuff went out the window. Like when somebody walks in with a big hat on, you're like, Joe, you gotta get that hat on. You know what I mean?
So, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
But, like, it's like a lot of the jokes we would think about what could be funny to do in these scenarios. And, you know, and we made characters. I have some of my, you know, I'm known for some of my famous characters on the show, you know, that we played. And especially the punishments, they got a little bit more care. Like me as Captain Fatbelly is just a straight up sketch, really, you know, in the form of a punishment. So, you know, I think it was just like, how can we be funny? And what we do is we make each other laugh. So that's all we showed America. Like, the show was more about friendship than anything for me. It was like people really took to it because you saw people being people. And I always said, even when we did improv back in the day, as long as we're having a good time, people can't have a bad time watching people having a good time. And I firmly believe that. So I carry that throughout my approach to comedy all the time. Like, if I'm having fun up there and I'm having a good time, I think people, it's infectious, you know?
Yeah, the audience is in the mood of the performer, yep, kind of.
For sure.
And you guys are also, you know, one of the masters of like found comedy, like what you said, where a hat comes in, it all goes out the window. You know, is that just your improv background that really makes you guys that great at that? Or is there some other dynamic?
Definitely that, but it's definitely the dynamic. Like, I know, like, when we thought of something, I'd be like, oh, Sal would do this funny. Or like, oh, let me write this for Q. Like, there's something about knowing what your friends do funny, right?
Yeah.
So like, when it was like, whatever, like, so if you think of some of the classic things we've done, you put somebody else in it, I don't know if it's going to hit as hard. It wouldn't be as good. I think we did a really good job of like, quote unquote typecasting, like what who should get what or what we should do to people, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's similar to like a sitcom that you love. Like you, whatever the situation, you sort of imagine the main character of that sitcom, what they would say in that situation.
For sure.
Your characters are just so.
Yeah, you're writing for George. You're writing for George. You're writing for Kramer. What do you know? Right, it's going to be completely different, you know. So it's like, I think you know what it is. If you want somebody to be, you know, knock weird out of the park, you're picking Murray. Like the guy just knows how to be creepy and sell it, and just like be like odd and not break. Like he's like good like that, like being odd, you know. But you know, if I come off as odd, I come off a little bit more crazy, where he comes off like very convincing that he's weird, you know, like. So I don't know if that's people's personalities and whatnot, but it's a little bit like, you know what it is. Like I would have an idea for something and there'd be times where we would be like, okay, you know what? Cause we come up with punishments in the beginning and be like, all right, these are the punishments. And then we'll just slot it out. You know, we know everybody's going to lose X amount. And then when it's time to go, we'll do it. And then when you write a punishment, it's like, we look at them like, all right, we don't have enough for Q. So we would tell Q, for instance, we were like, all right, we don't have enough for Q. So we would tell Q to come in at noon and we would come in at 10. So we would sit with the writers for 2 hours, just thinking about ways that what could Q do funny and what would he not like to do? And like all, there's so many different aspects of it, you know? And then we'd come up with, you know, some of the great stuff. Like I still think no one could have pulled that tram, stopping the tram at Universal Studios as good as Q did. Like that was unbelievable. That was so hard to do, and he just wore it, and like I don't know if any of us could have been able to do it as well as he did or as much as he did. Like it was crazy.
Yeah, oh my god. No, that I mean that has me cracking up. It makes me think I'm actually gonna get some we have a couple audience questions, but while we're getting to that, I'm curious myself. I mean, you guys have season after season after season of amazing show. Do you have like is there a moment that stands out as your favorite?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many. I mean, I did over 300 episodes of TV, you know, over a decade of my life is that I'm very proud of the product and being part of that legacy, you know, and making that show what it was. I think I will say my biggest gamble that paid off and nobody really believed that it would work was the mind. When we mind Sal for his punishment, where he didn't know if he was getting punished or not. So we had this idea. I had this idea, like Sal is his own worst enemy, where I know Sal gets in his own head. And I was like, you know, it could be really funny if we just send Sal into a friggin' tornado in his own mind. So we did this thing where we were filming a challenge in Union Square Park in the promenade where we always film. And we just had all these little things coming. We just keep going to Sal. Well, it's your punishment. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. And we just kept flipping it on him. And you could watch him wind up and just go. And it was one of those things where we had a code with each other, especially by the, I think that was in the sixth or seventh season, but whatever season that was, like right after the third season or second season, when we all knew what we were doing, we would just be like, guys, it's going to work. Let me do it. And you just look each other in the eye. If somebody said that, end the conversation. You know, it was really by committee of everything, but there'd been times when Q would be like, it's going to let me do it. And I'd be like, okay, like it's everybody's show. Right. So the punishments were always hard because everybody had to be on board. And Q and I were just going back and forth. He's like, well, how is it funny? I'm like, it'll be funny. He's like, you're just going to have a guy come with cement and you think Sal's going to think that he has to step in cement. I'm like, yeah. He's going to have nice sneakers on. He's a sneaker whore right now. So he's going to have great shoes on. And what does he say in the cut? He's like, oh my God, I can't stop. I have these shoes. And I'm like when he said that, Q just looked at me and he was like, you're right. And he jumped in and we had a blast. Like it was such a good time to do it. And I think that's one of the ones I'm most proud of. Cause it also speaks to how well we knew each other. You know, it speaks to what the show was really about. You know, that one's one of my favorites. And the other one that I couldn't believe we pulled off was the long con on Sal, where he really thought he was going to get arrested for grabbing that nose. So he thought we had filmed a challenge, and because a lot of behind the scenes stuff is crazy, we had filmed a challenge where we were playing I'm gonna get your nose, and Sal jumped up on a federal building and grabbed the nose of a statue. We all laughed. It aired 2 months later in the production office. There was a letter came in, and our showrunner came in and he said, guys, he's like, I have to go to a deposition because we trespassed on public property and put it on air. And we're like, what? And he showed us the letter, and we were like, again, the writers were like, this is stupid. Don't worry about it. Blah, blah, blah. He's like, I know. He's like, I know it's dumb. But I got to go, whatever. So he leaves the room. The next day I'm in for a meeting. I did a lot of the production. So I was there a lot, like getting in there, talking about scheduling and all that. That's what I loved. So I'm in there. He gets a letter. Yeah. He's like, hey, he's like, they called off the thing. They called off the meeting. And I was like, and I just went, no, they didn't. I said, they didn't call off the meeting. this is going to be a Sal punishment. And he's like, what? I was like, we're going to make Sal think he's going to pay a fine. And he's like, what? I was like, yeah. I was like, we're going to make this a whole drag out thing over a year. And then we'll make him go next season. Cause we had just got renewed for the next season. So I was like, so yeah, I knew it had to sit forever. Like, and we just kept dropping hints about it. Like every 2 months I'd be like, oh, and he'd come in and he'd be like, Pete was great. He'd be on like a fake phone call and he'd hang up. I was like, oh, I'm like, oh, what's the matter? He's like, this stupid thing. I got to go. He's like, now they want Sal to come. And Sal was like, what? I'm not going. And I was like, all right. And then he's like, I know. I told him that you can't go, blah, blah, blah. And then he did this whole thing where he's like, they made me submit the production schedule. They know we're off this day. He's like, we got to go. And so we talked Sal into going. We set up the room like completely. We used all sorts of different hidden cameras that we never used because we knew Sal would be able to find them. So we literally like bought the next level up of equipment that like we knew Sal wouldn't find. There was a camera in her water bottle. Like it was insane. And the ladies that would, and it went exactly as planned. So I was proud of that because that was a long con and, you know, it could have got messed up at any time.
Exactly. I love that. I mean, the nice thing is, as the show progressed, you guys knew each other better and could do those kind of more intricate things. But also when you're filming out there in the wild, you know, people are recognizing you. So did that, you know, create more barriers? How'd you get around that?
The hardest part for that was we could tell when people recognize us. That's not a problem. Like you could tell people turn into a robot and they're like, oh, and we see them on camera coming a mile away before they even see us. So we'll see the moment when they recognize Sal and they're trying to play it off because Sal doesn't see it. And they'll walk up to like the burger counter and be like, oh, one cheeseburger, please. Like they turn into a robot. They don't even know how to act, you know? And you could tell. But the hardest part for us was like when we're in the park and we have somebody on the hook and we're nailing it, somebody comes flying over and it's like, Joe, can we look at a picture? And you get recognized by a bystander. So what we had to start doing was our production team would form a barrier around us, like literally a dance circle, it felt like, where you have this person locked in and everybody's pretending to be doing something around us. And if somebody came in, they would like swoop in and grab and be like, shh, we're filming. So that was like, that
it's
was
like
a hard
the
thing.
Truman Show.
It really is. It was like that. Yeah, it's crazy.
You guys got the hot dog vendor on, is just a PA named Larry.
That's
from
exactly
Michigan,
right.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah. It was right. We would like send them out, flock them out. Like Shay would just go like tackle people. It'd be great.
Do you have any sort of, when you're not working, when you're not on the road doing anything, do you have any like guilty pleasures, like hobbies or just things that you
video game doing? Video games, Lego sets.
Oh, you're a Lego guy, huh?
Yeah, I do. I like Legos. I have like 5 unopened boxes right now because I was moving back into the house and I had stuff at the apartment and then but I just like, I forgot all these ones I bought. I just didn't have time to do it because I was on the road so much. So now that I'm back at the house, I like moved it back in and Bessie, my wife was like, she's like, and I had like 5 boxes of Lego. She's like, oh, she's like, are we going to do these together? I'm like, well, I bought them for me, but we could do them together. Cause we yeah. I mean, I have one of my favorite ones right here. Look, I'll show you.
Oh shit.
Yeah, the Lego Adidas. This is one of my faves that they did.
Oh my God.
Really cool, right?
That's incredible.
Yeah, this is one of my faves.
How many Legos were involved in that one?
That one was, I forget. I think it was like 1,075 or something like that. I mean, I have I did the Ghostbusters thing. I did the Sesame Street, you know, I did the Ecto-1, I did that. But I have a typewriter, which I'm really excited to do. It's like a typewriter one they did. You know, I had the Home Alone house that we put out there on Christmas. We did that together, which is fun. And my kids are getting a little older now. My daughter wants to start doing them with us, but they're a little too out of her range.
So did you get started doing Legos when you were a kid, or where'd that come from?
That was my thing. I was super creative. I wanted to be an architect when I first started, when I was young. And then my dad made me be an accountant, but yeah, I really liked Legos. Legos was probably my favorite toy growing up. And now that my kids love, like my son's obsessed with them too. I had 2 toys I love, Legos and Pipeworks. Do you know what Pipeworks were? Pipeworks were these like PVC pipes that had connectors and you could build whatever you wanted out of these things. Those are my 2 favorite.
Yeah. No. What were those called? They were called they weren't Lincoln Logs, but it was.
No, they were bigger. You make a go-kart. It had like a wheel in them and stuff. Like you could sit and like.
For oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were bigger.
Tinker toys.
Tinker toys. Well, no. Yeah, they were huge. Like they were the pipes.
It's more
were
of a badass big. Version.
Yeah, it was like that was like a. It was like you could make like a sword and a shield. Like it was like
oh nice
play toys. Yeah, you could make like a you know climbing thing and stuff. It was basically like little. I don't know. I think they were safe, but my kids have a version of them. I found them on Instagram and like I got a version of them for them. They love them.
So does that kind of scratch that that early childhood passion of yours? That scratch that itch?
That's the best thing about kids is you relive your childhood with them. You show them your favorites. My daughter's just getting into movies. She loves movies, and we started watching stuff together now because she's like eight. So we just literally watch like, you know, I show them a lot of the classic Disney they hadn't seen before. But then we just like for the first one, she wanted to watch something scary, but not too scary because she likes horror. She likes scary. Like she was Pennywise for Christmas, for Halloween.
Yeah.
For Christmas, that'd be weird. But yeah, she wanted to watch something scary. So we watched Ghostbusters, the original, and she loved it. It was really cool to watch that with her. You know, she's eight, so it was really fun. She got freaked out at a couple of things, like the librarian scene and when Slimer comes at Bill Murray. Those two things got her a little bit, but she was did really good. She liked that. So
is that the one Gozar's in?
Yeah. She didn't mind. Two? She didn't mind the door. No. No, okay. Two's the guy in the painting. What's his name?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah,
but the first one, she didn't mind it. She's not scared of that stuff. And we also watched, I couldn't believe she wanted it. We watched Godzilla versus King Kong, like the new one. And like, she loved it. She loved it. And I was like, that's, you know, that Godzilla, those fights are kind of scary. And she was like all into it. So it was pretty cool.
That's great. You ever do any practical jokes on your kids?
No. I don't bring my work home for me or Bessie. It's like, not what we do. Yeah. I don't really, you know, I'm not really like, I'm more like, you know, I with my friends, I'm more of a gotcha kind of guy, you know, but my like pranks aren't like, I'm not mean spirited with my stuff. Like I like to do stuff like that. I know that they're going to laugh too, or be annoyed at maybe the annoyance, which will make them laugh. You know, that thing that you could do with your friends where they're annoyed at you, but then they can't help but laugh at what happened.
Right.
So like, that's really my thing. And I'm a little brother. You know, I have two older sisters, and my favorite Mark is my middle sister, Carla. I annoy her like nobody's business, and she like hates to love it. If that makes sense, you know, we have a great time together. Yeah. And I see she has two boys, and I see her boys like emulate that. And I'm like, we've trained them well. She's like, you're such a pain in the uncle.
There's something about having a sister that gives you just a pass to be a
100%. 100%. You know? Yeah.
I've got eight of them. So I'm accustomed in that.
How many brothers?
Scenario. I got three brothers, eight sisters. So
all from the same deal,
you know,
all from the same,
all from the same deal. All same parents, the whole deal, man. I'm one of 12. Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Where are you in the lineup? Crazy. Where are you in the lineup?
Second oldest.
You're the 12, second oldest? Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, so you're, you know, as the youngest, I know your type. You know,
yep, that's me. Mom, stop it. See, I win.
You got any phrases that like sort of Staten Island phrases? Like there's a lot of Midwest phrases that we kind of say, you know, like bubbler or screwed the pooch or, you know, you got a bag of bags, you know, culturally speaking, what kinds of things do you kind of bring from your home out into the world, and people are like, the hell is that?
I think three sayings probably. What's the action is a big thing I always say when I'm talking about like, what's the discount? How long's the wait? It can mean whatever. I'm going to go up to like a host, I'm like, what's the action here? And I'm like, well, I'm like, how long's the wait? You know, it's like, what's the action is a sign I always say. I grew up in Italian, you know, with my uncles and everything. So on the brotch is a big one. When it's like something's free, it's on the arm, it's on the brotch. You know, it's like, it's on a brotch. And then I call money scatol. So like, I'm like,
what do you call it?
Scatol. It means like escarole is the Italian, like, you know, leaf green. And it's called, you know, scatol is a slang term for it. So I'm like, you got the scatol for us. So I got to stop and get some scatol if we're going to the casino, you know, like that kind of thing.
Those are great. Yeah. Those sound like a lot more cool than I think, you know, we call like a water fountain a bubbler, you know.
Oh, I got you. If you're looking for something like that, I don't think I had anything too weird like that. Yeah.
I mean, the schedule. Did I say that right?
Schedule. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You could even call it schiad if you want. You'd bring it down to schiad.
I love that. All right. I know you got a heart out here, so I just want to rip through a few more of these audience questions we have. What was your first job?
I scooped ice cream at the Big Apple Bazaar for my dad's friend, Tony, who paid me cash under the table $4 an hour.
Nice. Nice.
And then my first real job was at Party City. I was a stock boy for 4 years at the Party City there in Staten Island.
Oh, nice. Okay. All right. Did you have any with that money under the table? How long did that whole scenario last?
It was a summer.
It was just one summer.
My first summer. Yeah. 14-year-old gig.
Got it. Who were your comedic influences growing up?
Mel Brooks, for sure. Hands down. I think Mel Brooks. Like, I liked comedic movies, really. I was like a movie guy, like I told you. I would say Tim Allen, too, because me and my dad used to watch Home Improvement, and his was one of the first stand-up hours I remember, like, seeing, watching with my dad. I would say him. Richard Jenny was another one that I watched. I would say Looney Tunes as well. The, you know, I would say, you know, those, that kind of comedy. Slapsticky kind of, you know, physical stuff definitely was it. Airplane, of course.
Airplane's a great one.
Oh my god, yeah. And you know, Zucker is like a good friend of ours now too, and I can't believe that, you know, he's such a cool dude.
That's,
and, you know,
yeah, isn't that crazy to get to a point where like your hero becomes one of your buddies?
A buddy, yeah, like texting me on my birthday. It's like crazy.
I want to touch on sort of the work you do with animal rescue or dogs specifically. Like, where did that all come from? What's the story there?
Yeah, so last November we launched Gatto Pups and Friends, my nonprofit out here in New York, and we went from basically a hobby of just rescuing dogs to being like, how can we make a bigger impact? And we were like, you know what, we could start up and start finding homes for these dogs that's not just our house. So we started adoptions. We actually just did our 36th adopt out yesterday. We got two more going today. So it's like, it's been going really well.
All right. That is all the time we have for now. For my full interview with Joe, find the Cripes Cast anywhere you get your podcasts. All right, that is it for this week's episode of the Cripes Cast. Huge thanks to Joe for coming on the show. Make sure you follow Gatto Pups and Friends at gattopupsandfriends.com. Follow Joe anywhere he is. He's Joe Gatto Official or Joe_Gatto. And then you can also go at Gatto Pups and Friends. You can find them on social media as well. You can follow Cripescast at Cripescast anywhere you get your podcast, patreon.com/CharlieBarons, behind the scenes, first look at concert tickets, some crowd work from the shows. We got all that up there. Check it out if you like. And thank you guys for listening. Colleen, thank you very much for doing your EP work. Thanks to Hannah Milos for editing. And everybody, enjoy the fall, and we'll see you next week.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
All of these things consistently come down to this: willingness of people to give up their agency and the willingness of Donald Trump and those who support him to leverage and abuse people's trust in them to further their own personal power and enrichment.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weeknights at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm